Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
My name is Harry Mount, editor of the Oldie, the greatest magazine in the universe. I'm extremely delighted to welcome three very distinguished speakers today. Mark Mason, a tremendous friend and contributor at the Oldie. And Oscar Wilde was a regular here at Simpsons in the Strand, and he once said, to have one world-class historian speak at the Oldie Lunch is extraordinary. To have two is a price beyond compare. But while we're talking about the subject of world-class, the world's greatest comedian, Barry Cryer.
Hello. As I was saying, I'm Barry Cryer, someone he has to be. Will we first of all welcome Linda and Bob Farron from Dorset, celebrating 25 years silver wedding here today. Where are you? My darling and I have been married for a mere 56 years, and when we've been together 25 years, I said, silver wedding, darling, second honeymoon, where do you want to go after 25 years with me? And she looked me straight in the eyes and said, Lourdes. Oh, he's off now. Couple celebrating their golden wedding went down to the tennis club, and after several drinks, the dear wife became rather frisky. And she said, remember, we used to make love against the fence behind the pavilion. Yes? She said, oh, once more, darling, for old time's sake. And they went behind the pavilion, and the most beautiful, passionate scene ensued. And she said, darling, that was wonderful. He said, nobody told me that electrified the fence. Now. I might tell that again later, I don't know. Now, a ritual, the regulars know this. It is time, the convention, before I introduce our authors, the parrot joke. And as I always say, if you feel tempted to join in, please don't. It spoils it for the few who haven't heard it. When we went into a shop, saw this beautiful blue and gold parrot. She said to the man, he's gorgeous, how much? He said, 20 quid. She said, 20 pounds, he's beautiful. He said, well, I've got to give you the truth. He said, he's got form, he's got history. He was in a brothel. And to put it delicately, he's got quite an extensive vocabulary. She said, 20 pounds, I'll take a chance on that. And she took it back to the flat, took the cover off, and the parrot looked round and said, new place, very nice. And her two daughters walked in, and the parrot said, new place, new girls, very nice indeed. And her husband walked in, and the parrot said, hello, Keith. Now, enough. Introductions. Our first author's contribution is the Book of Seconds. A pathetic memory of mine now beckons. When considering those who nearly made it, years ago I remember, it doesn't fade it, is with me now, although I feel a fool. I was second highest peeing up the wall at school, giving a whole new meaning to waterstones. Enough. I can tell you're feeling it in your bones. Introduce him. And so here to take his place on our author's team, welcome Mark Mason.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I have to start by saying that I'm painfully aware, as I'm sure you are as well, that with your other two speakers today being Adam Zamoyski and Andrew Roberts, that it's perfectly obvious what's happened here. I've been asked to come along and add a little bit of intellectual weight to proceedings. Clearly, our friends at the Oldie said to themselves, look, all this flippant froth about Napoleon and Churchill is all very well, but what we really need is the man who, the last time he spoke to an Oldie literary lunch, informed everybody that Pimlico is the only London Underground station to share no letters with the word badger. reporting for duty, ladies and gentlemen. That was to talk about my deeply intellectual book about pub quizzes. I'm here today to talk about my even more deeply intellectual book, The Book of Seconds, as Barry mentions. Funnily enough, Barry's school achievement isn't in the book, but we got the idea for the book. It was an idea that I had between my editor and myself. We were talking about Roger Bannister, and this was a couple of years ago before Bannister had died. And, of course, as soon as you hear the name Roger Bannister, you think first man to run a four-minute mile. And I found myself saying, well, who was the second guy to run a four-minute mile? And don't you feel sorry for him that he's never got any attention? Hence the idea for the book. So he was the first one I went and looked up. He's a guy called John Landy, who ran the four-minute mile. Some athletics fans in, I can hear. And he's an incredible guy. During one of his races, not the race where he first did the 4 minutes, but a subsequent race, he was doing 1,500 metres, and one of the other guys fell over. And Landy doubled back to go and check that the guy who'd fallen over was okay, and then still managed to make up the gap between himself and the leaders, and he went on and won the race. Now, if Roger Bannister had done that, you'd know all about it, because he was Roger Bannister. But John Landy, second man to run a four-minute mile, you haven't heard of him, so you don't know the story. So that's what the book aims to redress. So there are people in there like Alan Shepard, the second man in space. Yuri Gagarin got the fame, he was the first man in space. Alan Shepard, just a few weeks later, was the American who was fired into space. And they asked him later, they said, as you were sitting on top of that rocket about to be blasted up into space, the final few seconds before liftoff, what were you thinking? And he replied, the fact that every part of that spacecraft had been built by the lowest bidder. So that was Alan Shepard for you. There are other things. They're not all people, by the way, in the book. There are things like the 1900 Olympics. We all know that 1896, Athens, the first modern Olympics. Paris came 4 years later, 1900. The only Olympics ever in history where the shooting competition used live pigeons as the target. Only the French, ladies and gentlemen. And then there are other things in there, like it's obviously the book split into categories. There's a sporting category, for instance. Landy's in there. And someone else in the sports chapter is a guy called Steve Daly. Any football fans? Steve Daly, the second man to be transferred for £1 million between clubs. Trevor Francis, famous as the first £1 million footballer. Steve Landy came a few months later. Now, obviously, the aim of the book is to prove that these seconds can be admirable and successful, and it's very unfair that you haven't heard of them. Steve Daly's in there as one of the exceptions. The move was an absolute nightmare. He went to Man City, and it all went horribly wrong. And his website now bills himself as the world's first £1,437,500 footballer. So these things can go wrong. There are other categories like the arts. Lots of arts entries in there. And the arts chapter gave me the chance to tell the John Gielgud story, which it's not actually a second, but you'll see why it's in the book. I couldn't resist putting it in. John Gielgud was having lunch one day at the Ivy with a playwright called Edward Knobloch. Now, if you put that name in a novel, no one would believe it, but I promise you the guy was called Edward Knobloch, K-N-O-B-L-O-C-K. And as they're having lunch, someone that Gielgud knows walks by the table, so Gielgud has a few words with him, and then the guy moves on. And Gielgud leans across to Knobloch and says, that man is the second biggest bore in London. So Knobloch asks the obvious question, well, who's the biggest bore in London? And John Gielgud said, Edward Knobloch, of course. Not you, the other Edward Knobloch. that's not actually a proper entry, as you can tell. But one of the proper entries from the arts chapter was the second talking film. You've all heard of the jazz singer. It's famous as the first talkie. The year later came Tenderloin, a film directed by a guy called Michael Curtis. Michael Curtis wasn't his birth name. He was Hungarian. And he's Michael Curtis, the anglicized version of his name. And he went on to have a very successful career as a film director, but never completely mastered the English language. And he went on to be so successful, one of the films he directed was Casablanca. And while he was directing Casablanca, he said to the props guy one day, get me a poodle, I want a poodle. And the props guy, understandably, is very annoyed that Curtis hadn't mentioned this before, but nevertheless, he races around the pet shops, manages to get a poodle from somewhere, takes it back to the set, feeling very pleased with himself, and says to Curtis, here's the poodle. And Curtis goes, what do I want with this goddamn dog? He said, well, it's the poodle you asked for, Mr. Curtis. He said, no, I want a poodle of water on the ground. So sometimes you can achieve a bit of success in life and still not completely master the language you're operating in. I did a cheeky little chapter on, again, it sort of doesn't quite fit, but there's some nice stories in there, second marriages. And for instance, one of the first ones I'm sure we all think of is Jackie Kennedy, as she was becoming Jackie Onassis. Gore Vidal was once asked how the world would have been different if in November 1963 it had been Nikita Khrushchev that had been assassinated instead of John F. Kennedy. And Gore Vidal said that he couldn't be entirely sure, but one thing he was sure about was that Aristotle Onassis wouldn't have married Mrs. Khrushchev. Which cues up in terms, talking of American presidents assassinated, again, one of the most incredible stories that you haven't heard of, because he wasn't the first American president ever to be assassinated, was obviously Abraham Lincoln. Second was a guy called James Garfield in 1881. Incredible man. He could write simultaneously with both hands, his left hand in Latin and his right hand in Greek. And the assassination itself was an astonishing story. The guy who shot him was a complete nutter, who went and made sure that he bought a gun with a really nice handle so that it would look good in a museum when it became famous as the gun that had shot the president. This is the sort of guy we were dealing with. And it took Garfield weeks and weeks to die of a very hot Washington summer, and there was a bullet trapped in his body, and the doctors were probing for it with unsterilized fingers, and it's an astonishing story. The really surreal bit, and again, if you put this in a novel, no one would believe it. One of the people that came along to treat James Garfield as he lay dying was Alexander Graham Bell, who had invented a metal detector specifically for the purpose of finding the bullet that was lodged in Garfield's body. And the doctors were convinced it was trapped on one side and would only let Bell search on that side, and actually the bullet was on the other side of the body. Again, one of these bizarre stories that you never get to hear because it's a second, not a first. Anyway, I don't want to delay us for too long, so I've thought of different ways I could finish. I could have finished with some of the other miscellaneous ones from the book, like Saturn. Saturn was one of my favorite discoveries. Saturn is in there because it's the second biggest planet in the solar system. Saturn is also the only one that's less dense than water, so if you could find a big enough bath, then Saturn would float in it. It's one of those beautiful little images, you know. I could have told you about New Guinea, which is the second largest island in the world after Greenland. And New Guinea, they have this wonderful Creole language, sometimes known as New Guinea Pidgin, which has fantastic expressions for things. Helicopter is Magimix belong Jesus. Jesus is Magimix. Isn't that a lovely image? If something's broken in that language, it's Bagarap from Bugger Up. And when Prince Charles went there a few years ago, he introduced himself as number one piccaninny belong Mrs. Quinn. Number one child belonging to Mrs. Queen. That's how he was told to introduce himself. So I could have done all of that, but now I'm going to tread a little bit onto the turf of one of your other speakers today. And the reason I'm going to tell this Churchill anecdote is that, I've checked with Andrew. The reason I'm going to tell it is that it comes from Churchill's second spell as Prime Minister. Don't forget the book is the Book of Seconds. Got to the merch there. Second time as Prime Minister, 51 to 55. They woke Churchill up one morning with the news that... they were very nervous waking him up and telling him this. They said, I'm very sorry, Prime Minister. One of our backbenchers has been caught in the bushes in St. James's Park with a guardsman. And I'm afraid the press have found out about it. He's been obliged to retire, and there's going to be a bit of a stink about it. And they think Churchill's going to hit the roof. A few seconds silence while Churchill thinks, and Churchill says, it was very cold last night, wasn't it? And all a bit confused. And one of them says, well, yes, Prime Minister. I think it said on the wireless that it was the coldest February night for 20 years. Churchill thought for a few more seconds and he said, makes you proud to be British, doesn't it? There we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Do come see me afterwards. Other than that, I'll see you around. Cheers.
For more about the Oldie magazine, Amber Lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.